Welcome to the Digital Agency Pros Podcast with Andrew McBurney, your host of Digital Agency Pros. In this podcast, we sit down and talk to CEOs, founders, and professionals in the marketing world and talk shop all things related to building an agency and marketing. All right, let's get into it.
Hey guys, welcome to another episode, and today we have Eduardo joining us on the show. And Eduardo is originally from Spain, but came to the UK at the age of 18 to learn English back in 2012. Currently, he's a passionate digital marketing professional, and he's based in London and works as a freelancer. His specialties include SEO and pay-per-click advertising in both Google and Facebook. All right, let's get into it. Welcome to the show, Eduardo. So tell us, how did you get to become where you're at in your company?
Hello, Andrew, and thank you for having me here today. It's with a great pleasure that I'm here, and happy to tell you how I got here. So as you know, I'm doing PPC and SEO, and everything started back in 2016. I was living in Singapore, and I come from a farming background. My father has been a farmer for a long time, and at the time he was trying to sell some fruits back in Spain, and unfortunately some of the prices were really low. They still are. I mean, that's some issues that farmers face on a yearly basis. And at the time I told my dad I was going to build a website, and I started playing around with SEO. Eventually the website is currently ranking top one in many countries. So I saw the potential that, you know, the internet had for many companies, and I really enjoyed working with my PC, my website, my SEO, and I would say that was the trigger that led me where I am today. Things happened later on. I worked for several companies. I helped different businesses. I helped many businesses during the pandemic as well, and I saw that I found something that I really liked. So I just dived in, and here I am.
I love it. So in your bio, you mentioned at the age of 18, you came to the UK to learn English. So that was back in 2012. Yeah. Now, before you did that, did you have your eyes set on, oh, this internet thing is game changing, like I want to dive in there? Or did that happen after you moved to the UK?
All right. So before I moved to the UK, my eyes were set on the English language because I didn't really have any English at all. At the time, it was really difficult for me to visualize this this trend, which has accelerated with all the pandemic, right? Mm-hmm. I was really into mobile. Everything digital was great to me. But when it comes to SEO and PPC, you have to really deep dive into technicalities. Mm-hmm. And it's another level. So yes, I was really interested in the topic. Mm-hmm. I knew how things were looking like, because my dad, apart from being a farmer, he also had a restaurant. Well, actually, he had two restaurants, and he unfortunately lost most of his business. Although he was in the city center of Valencia, my main city, he lost most of the business to the competition, who were taking on digital faster than him, right? So he had the same website as 10 years ago. He wasn't doing any social media. Mm-hmm. And I was telling him, you know, I think the trend is going this way. I couldn't explain really well how and where it was going, because I didn't really get the point of SEO, social media, and PPC at the time. Now I can. But yeah, that's how I saw things at the time. And obviously now, I mean, we can just look around and see that everyone is pretty much going online.
Yeah, definitely. It definitely blew up. I feel sorry for the business owners who were back in the day, are like, I don't know, that's bad, that's going away. It makes me always curious about the new technologies as they emerge. Is like, is this going away, or is this like virtual reality, for example, right? I wonder if there's like some like unheard of opportunities that like these super cutting edge smart marketers are like just making bank on, like tons of money, because we're all kind of like, it's something, but we don't really know how to work it.
Exactly.
Yeah, but that's really cool. I love how you came from an entrepreneurial family and now you're running in more of an entrepreneurial capacity yourself. Is that something, when it came time, like what's your background like in terms of education?
So I graduated from the University of Manchester back in 2018. Mm-hmm. I did a couple of masters also in business, and I was working at the same time. So I was doing my my studies while I was into my, you know, what later became my freelancing business. Mm-hmm. So it's been always business related. And funny that I say this, because I never specialized back in uni in marketing. Mm. I always learned marketing by myself. I read books, watched a lot of videos online. I'm a big fan of articles such as Neil Patel's blog. Mm-hmm. So I never specialized in marketing. It was more economy related at the time. Mm. And I did a couple of masters and eventually decided that this is what I wanted to do. And it's been game changing the past few years for me.
Yeah, that's really cool. Now, in terms of your family, were they supportive of your decision to kind of break away and go out on your own as a freelancer, or was that something that was met with resistance?
So, to be honest, the only person that supported me when I came to the UK was my dad. No one else did, because they were afraid that something could go wrong. Mm-hmm. So when after a few years I graduated from a university and two masters, they pretty much thought that any decision that I made was great. Mm-hmm. So thank God everyone supports me now. Mm-hmm. When I say everyone, from my girlfriend to my dad to my mom to, and it's never been a case where they've said otherwise. Mm-hmm. And I think that's very important. We have people around you who support you, and if you don't have it or you don't have them, just, you know, turn around and find people that are going to be there with you, for you. Because at the end of the day, that's your dream, your passion. Mm. We live once and you need to do what you like, because, you know, passion is what drives you during the worst moments or days that you're going to have, because we all have bad moments.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, right? I absolutely love that, man. And it's so true, especially when you're starting out, you have like, you have nothing but a gut feel. You're like, I'm pretty sure this will work. And it's not to say like, oh, perfect, right? Like the whole like 9-to-5 lifestyle basically tailors you to expect consistency, predictability, and no kind of roller coaster ride, which is pretty much inherent with the entrepreneurial journey, regardless of what you're doing, right? And so it's always interesting to me whenever like somebody who works at 9-to-5, whether it's a family member or somebody else, you're like, man, aren't you scared this could happen? It's like, oh, that could happen. Yeah. And then like, we would just move on. Right. Like, it's not a big deal at all. Right. And they're like, exactly. Oh, it's like, oh, I never thought about that.
do you agree that, we are taught to have problems solved, right? So when we go to university, for instance, right, you go to university and they say, you know, after 4 years, you're going to have a job, right? Mm-hmm. After getting a job, if you get a master's, you are pretty much certain you're gonna have a promotion. Mm-hmm. So it looks like, you know, society is built around this certainty, which is actually fake. Mm-hmm. Especially when you go into entrepreneurship, right? Mm-hmm. There is no 9-to-5, there is no hours, there is no weekends, mm-hmm. right? It depends on you how much work you want to put so that you can clear out that certainty that we are, you know, discussing here. Mm-hmm. It's true. It's such a different world when you leave, especially university. Mm-hmm. It's just totally different.
Yeah, no, I 100% agree with you. And it's scary at the start, for sure. Because especially, like, I can only speak from my personal experience, but I've talked to a lot of entrepreneurs who resonate with this, where it's like, I'm kind of like building this new thing, like back in, I started in 2015, right? And it's like, I'm building this new thing, and it's like, it's kind of working, I'm making a bit of money. And like, every time I tell somebody about it, they're like, that sounds like a scam, right? It's like, that sounds really risky. Like, that sounds sketchy, or like whatever, right? And it's like, they can't even fathom the fact that like, I went out and I bought a course on something. And they're like, yeah, that person definitely ripped you off, right? It's like, no, there's actually this whole world of like, where you can just exchange money for somebody's expertise that took them 20 years of trial and error and tons of money to get that information. And it's just immediately transferred to you, right? And it's like, it always boggles my mind that it's like people who like, they've dropped like 30 grand on school, like college, or 50 grand or 100 grand. And they're like, no, I would never spend $1,000 on a course. It's like, right? But like, that course has like an immediate application in the real world. You can finish it in 2 weeks and start making money from it, right?
Exactly. Yeah, I mean, totally spot on.
Yeah, like in my mind, that's less risky. It's not easier.
Yes.
I think going the traditional route's easier in the sense that the certainty's there, or it feels like it's there. Right. And Yeah, and it's not necessarily there, right? Because like you can like the pandemic has proved that, right? Like how many people who had these cushy 9-to-5 jobs are all of a sudden out of work and now they're relying on the government to feed them, to put food on their table. Meanwhile, it's like as an entrepreneur, you can pivot pretty easily. You're like, okay, I guess I'm doing something else now, or I'm serving a different market or whatever, right? Like when the pandemic hit, for example, for me, I had a split between like digital products and clients and e-commerce clients and then medical clients, right? And I was doing like SEO, conversion optimization, analytics, funnel building, all that stuff, right? And it's like, okay, well, I guess we're not working with these medical practices that have all closed down, but over here, let's lean into this because this company's sales just tripled overnight, right? Because e-commerce blew up. And without a job, like it's a gamble, right? Like if you were in the toilet paper, like if you were like working in the toilet paper manufacturing business and you were like working in a factory there, you would have had no shortage of work in the early pandemic. But if you were like something where it's like you required people like I don't know, like a hygienist at a dental office, right? You're out of work. People aren't showing up to the dentist, right? And so yeah, it's always interesting to kind of look at that through the lens of entrepreneurship and where are the opportunities. Now, entrepreneurship though comes with many struggles, right? Like there's
It
the
does.
idea that you eat what you kill, right? And all that to say that if you don't make the sale, you don't get the money, right? Whereas like
There
that
we go.
paycheck, the paycheck that comes in each month, feels like it's certain. There's feel like there's that certainty that it'll come in each month. And then with the entrepreneurship, the potential is much higher, but then you also have to actually put in the work to do it. Now, when you made that transition, you're like, okay, I'm gonna go become a freelancer. Did you start with a very specific service in mind? Like, I know you do Facebook ads, you do SEO, and you do Google ads. Did you start with one of those to start and then expand out? Like, what did that look like?
So actually, no, I went all in with the three of them. And it was difficult at the time because I couldn't really forecast the level of customers that I was going to have. As I said, I didn't have an experience with any agency, which is where you get the most exposure. So I went pretty much all in without understanding, how many people I was going to get or customers. The thing is, I started also with the pandemic, and I think that was also that also defined my approach to my work, because at the time I decided to contact many business owners and give them my services almost for free, right? I thought it was a good way for me to build credibility through reviews and also figure out, where I was gonna go after towards. Was I gonna focus more on PPC or SEO? So after those projects, because there were quite a bit of work to do around, given that no one was ready for the pandemic and digital was such an imminent need, I decided that, and I realized that I can't either go into PPC nor into SEO only, because if you need PPC, if you do PPC, you need SEO, right? When you do PPC in Google Ads, the main metric you need to be looking at is quality score, right? And quality score is influenced by the optimization of your landing page, right? And for that, you need a proper knowledge of SEO. And when you do SEO, sometimes you could be benefiting really well from some PPC campaigns for those more less competitive informational keywords, right? So I couldn't really focus on one because I was missing out on too much if I was just going after one. So I eventually decided to go after, PPC and SEO at the same time, and it's been very challenging because you need to do double the work, double the study, double the reading, because you want to be on top of everything and you want to make sure that your clients have the best service they can possibly get from you. So yeah, I mean, that's a long question to your answer.
Yeah, no, that's an excellent answer though. And I love how you touched on that whole idea of staying current, because that's something that a lot of agencies struggle with, and they end up hiring people like you who are staying on top of it, right? Because like if I look back at my own experience, for example, I essentially turned into an account manager as I grew. And like my job was to make sure that the projects were being delivered on time and new sales coming in the door. And at the end of the day, everybody else was really doing the hard work of that technical implementation and staying on top of that. And like if I look at Facebook ads, for example, I'm out of touch with Facebook ads these days because of the iOS update. I think it was iOS 14. And I'm not sure how that impacts things. Like the fact that they took away, like I haven't ran serious Facebook ads since they took away Facebook analytics. And like, I used to leverage that to find the best audiences to optimize the campaigns, right? So it's like, it can all change so quickly. And there's so many different things from whether it's just like internal policy that dictates the change, or it's like something like Apple where they're aggressively challenging the landscape of how people consume and how people are tracked online, right? Yeah. And or it's just new products, right? Like you have Google, for example, like they sometimes will literally change your ads without your consent.
That's right, which is really
frustrating. And they just do it because they can. And they're in their mind, what they're trying to do is build up this whole like AI algorithm thing to get it to the point where it's so good that they don't need people like us to manage the campaign. But at the end of the day, you're always going to need somebody to manage the campaign. But like that's what their agenda is. That's why they make those edits, right? And it's like one of those things. If you don't tell a small business owner that, they might think it's like, oh, I set it up and it's working. And it's trash, right? Like I remember one time I took on a client and they were selling an e-com product and it was a small budget, $300 a month, right? And they'd been running for about a year and it was all broad match modified key terms. And it was just like the most irrelevant things they were showing for. And basically 90% of their budget each month would show for things that would never translate into a sale. And they explained it to me like, oh yeah, like I got on, like where our ads are really great. Like we got on with a Google rep that walked me through the whole process. And like, sometimes that's great. Like sometimes they do nail it, but you still need to have the, like, they don't know about your product at the end of the day. Right. No. So it's like this specific rep told them, it's like, oh yeah, like if you just go for this term, then you'll get in front of all the people who are searching for that term. And it's like, yeah, you don't want to get in front of all those people because you're getting every single time they click, right? You want somebody searching for the problem, right? A solution to the problem.
Yeah, that's the problem. Sometimes when you get advice from the reps, they only follow best practices from a Google standpoint. Mm. And funny thing, I recently talked to one of them, and I don't know if you heard of this CAC structure for Google Ads, which basically
single keyword
ad groups. Mm-hmm. Right. I think that's like a standard thing for many Google ad account managers. And I was discussing this idea with a rep who didn't really know what I was talking about, because he was just following some guidelines from Google Ads, and he was ticking the boxes, and that wasn't in their agenda. So I told him, look, I think the structure you're giving me is great, but we are seeing a really high CPA. I need to lower this, and we already implemented what you told me. So I need something more. And I was discussing this CAC structure, but there was no way, because they didn't really heard about this before. And when it comes to Google, like trying to take over of your management of the account, I recently got an email, two or three months ago. Everything looks so recent now when you're working every day, so many hours. I got an email saying, and I saw the email by chance, that they were going to automatically apply all the recommendations in my accounts. You know, all these optimization requests that you get sometimes from Google Ads saying, if you apply these broad keywords, you will be getting more visits and impressions, which obviously bring you a lot of trashy traffic. So they said they were going to implement all these automatic changes into my accounts. So I quickly went into all the accounts of my client and disabled it, because can you imagine like losing control completely of your accounts just because of like Google is basically taking over your job basically, and then just giving you more traffic that's not valuable and it's not helping. That's the thing. It's not helping. You still need a human behind, because as you said, you need to know the person, the audience of your client. You need to know the product. You need to know what you're going after, and you need to understand what you're selling and your USPs. So, and that's something the algorithm can't read, right? Which is a good point that you mentioned.
Yeah, it's so true. At the end of the day, you kind of need to marry that technical understanding that a lot of the reps have a really great understanding of. Like I find when something's not working right, or maybe I'm trying to figure out a policy stuff, issue or whatever, like reps are great in that regard. But in terms of getting a true ROI and tracking the result, I've never been super impressed there. The one difference though is if you're, and I've never actually been on an account big enough to get this on Google. I don't even know if it's a thing on Google. I bet it probably is. But with Facebook, if you're running a big enough ad spend, you get like legit reps. They're not like entry level support people. They're people who actually like they have a portfolio of customers and they're managing you, right? And those people are interesting from a business perspective, where like I still wouldn't necessarily blindly accept any solution they bring to you, but it's like you can bounce ideas off, and they have a deeper understanding of business in general that a technical support person with on the ad platform might not have, right? So I think it is really important to take anything from anybody, not just the people at big tech companies, with a grain of salt, but also to not be afraid to throw ideas out and then critically think about what they come back with, right? Because like sometimes if they say like, oh, we think this keyword will work, like, well, why, right? And it's like, well, it has search volume. It's like, well, who's searching with it, right?
Yes, exactly. No, yeah, I agree. I mean, sorry if I came across as saying that they are not useful. Definitely not. They are really useful, but they don't really understand the product and the business, right? As you mentioned. And that can be a problem sometimes, because you can see higher spend and, you know, lower conversions. Mm-hmm. Because sometimes, you know, it doesn't really work the same for all the accounts. The product can be really specific, and maybe the month you're working in is not the best month that you're having, because your product is performing better in Christmas and not now. So it can be tricky for them and for us.
Yeah, no, 100%. Yeah, like I wasn't challenging what you're saying. 100% agree with everything you're saying. I think that's a really important thing, that you can't just look at anybody as like the be all end all and like, oh yeah, they're gonna totally change the game, right? Unless you truly are hiring somebody who is that specialist. And even when you hire a specialist, you still need to stay on top of what's happening.
Exactly.
Right? You can't just like blindly hire somebody and be like, yeah, have at it, right? That's really cool. Now, in terms of the type of work that you do, are you selling direct to small businesses, or do you sell to agencies and kind of in a white label relationship? Like, what does that look like?
So my portfolio is a bit mixed up. I'm currently working at the moment with two agencies in the UK who hire me for their PPC and SEO work, and also have my own clients. So I have four clients myself, and then I have these two agencies. And one of the clients are of different sizes. Some of them are really small. Mm-hmm. I have a really big telco company in Spain that's present in really in many countries. Mm-hmm. And I do SEO for them. So it's very, very, very varied.
I love that. Yeah. And I remember when I was starting out, that agency relationship was so valuable, because it checked so many boxes for me that I wasn't good at. Like I really struggled with sales starting out, and getting in front of and pitching somebody, sending the proposal, and closing it. So it was just like, it was awesome for me whenever, and even if the pay was less, it was like they would do all these things, and it's like, oh, now I don't have to do all that. They're coming to me with a pre-sold thing, and it's like, hey, just sit down. I just need you to be the technician on this. It's like, send me the hourly report or whatever, right? And that was pretty cool too, because I still can't disclose the name, just because it was all under like non-disclosure agreements and whatnot. But like I got to work with some huge brands in Canada, like brands that like I grew up working, like, or not working with, but like hearing about. And it's like these like really obscure things that I was like, I didn't even know they would spend money on advertising. I just thought they were a thing that everybody knew about, right? But it's pretty cool. And it's like, just because I was working for an agency that had been in business for like 20, 30 years, and they really knew what they were doing, and they had a bunch of accounts, right? So it was a pretty cool experience for sure. Mm-hmm. Now, in terms of the way you work with an agency, what does that typically look like? Are you dictating the terms, or are you flexible to work and fill the need with the agency on a case-by-case basis?
So usually, well, first of all, I need to say that, and maybe they hear this podcast, they know who they are. I need to say about these agencies that I work with that I'm super grateful. I'm surprised to see how well they take care of the freelancers. Mm-hmm. I want to say this in case they are listening to this. I work, so I'm always trying to adapt my my services to all my clients, including agencies. Usually they come to me because they have a client that needs help. It might be either PPC or SEO. One of them, it's a really big agency. So they hire me on a project basis. I have X hours agreed every month. And then their SEO and PPC department give me the work that I need to get done. The other one is slightly smaller, and they give me basically pretty much a client contact. We have a really good relationship, and I often talk to the clients. It depends. I mean, whether they want me to do it on hourly or monthly rate, that would depend on the level of work they require from me.
Yeah, I love that. I think there's so much value in offering that white label solution to agencies, or because it's just like you can come in and you can be like, hey, we're just going to bolt onto the side of your agency. We're going to work under your brand. And all of a sudden you're going to open up a whole new revenue stream because you can start selling PPC more aggressively, knowing that the technical implement or deliverability of it is taken care of. Right.
Yeah.
And knowing that you have like Eduardo, for example, behind the scenes ready to go when you need him is a big plus. Right. Like I've definitely been in situations where I had one bad situation one time where I ended up helping them just on I didn't take the contract, but like I just felt sorry for them, where it's like a new account manager sold a this PPC deal through an agency that was like born to fail, right? Like the company that they sold the PPC agreement to never would succeed with PPC, right? With Google Ads.
Wow.
And it was just like, if you knew anything about Google Ads, if you weren't just an account manager, you never would have sold that to begin with, right? So having that experience where it's like somebody you can really lean on, and it's like, no, not everybody can benefit from these different tactics. Like you need to make sure it is a good fit before you make the sale. Otherwise you're setting yourself up for failure, right? And with that agreement, like the plan wasn't to come up with a campaign. The plan was to come up with a damage control plan to basically say, hey, we actually, after looking at this more, we don't think you can win with this, right? Like budget elsewhere. And it's sometimes it's the Wild West out there. It's like good meeting people make mistakes, of course, right? But now in terms of your own marketing, how do you market your freelance business and keep work coming in?
All right. So marketing as a freelancer can be a really headache because you need to manage pretty much everything of your business. And as a freelancer, I don't outsource any of my work. I do get all the work done for my clients because I want to maintain the level of quality that they hired me for. So my weeks are so busy that I need to automate some of the tasks when it comes to marketing. So I try to post every week a couple of articles on LinkedIn. I use a tool called Publer, which allows me to do the work during the weekend. And then I say, you know, I'm going to post this on Monday, and this on Thursday, and, you know, it automatically goes out. I also did a lot of reach out in LinkedIn. So going after agents, especially because I realized that, you know, that's where they're, you know, spending most of the time, the owners and CEOs of agencies. But when it comes to looking for clients, like small, medium-sized clients that I want to work with directly, I don't go after random people or profiles and call them up, because I tried that and it didn't work out. Okay, people who need your services are actually looking for your services. And one of the places to go to is Upwork. That's where I started to advertise myself when I realized that, you know, I'm calling all these people and like they might say maybe, but it's always no. So I had a zero conversion rate when it came to cold calling. But when it came to Upwork, things changed. And it's because many people do need digital marketing services and freelancers, and they go out to the platforms they know, Upwork, People Per Hour. I don't know what you have in the US, possibly Upwork is one of the biggest as well.
Upwork,
right? The problem with Upwork is that you need to start, you know, pretty much doing your work almost for free because the level of competition is so high, and people only look at the reviews that you have, how much, you know, people spent on your services on Upwork. And it was when I got this top rated badge in Upwork, and after a lot of work, that I didn't even have to reach out to anyone. I'm actually now getting messages from clients with my services through Upwork. So that solved a lot of the headache that I had at the start. But again, it was a really long process, obviously. And I continue doing marketing. So I'm starting a blog as well. I've got a couple of articles up. And I'm trying to make them as, you know, rich and relevant to my audience as possible. I'm constantly marketing on LinkedIn, sharing posts with the people that are that follow me, and I'm always looking for networking. So I have these, I don't know if you heard before about tools such as Lunch Club, which is this tool where you sign up for a couple of calls every week with a randomer, and you connect with people that maybe are based in the US, maybe in Israel, maybe in India, you never know, in Europe. And I've met really interesting people who know someone who might need my services, and then, you know, eventually. So it's about always being on top of your game, trying to market yourself as much as possible, and never take a break. Because once you take a break, you know, you sit back and relax, and it's really hard to get back and get the work done again.
Yeah, it is all about building up, like we call it pipeline, right? Where it's like you have prospects waiting there that are, maybe they're going to close in 6 months from now, but like you're constantly building those relationships. You're staying on top of those relationships. And that was one thing I definitely struggled with in the early days, where I would land a few SEO campaigns and be like, all right, well, I got my next 6 months of business, right? And it's like going it's like kind of just like focus on that technical stuff. But then it's like, you look at the lifespan, and it's like, okay, if they churn every 9 months, it's like, you need to have that mechanism in place where you're constantly have people coming up behind them to at least replace them, if not grow.
Yes.
Right? And it really depends on goals. Like some people are happy with 10K a month through freelance because there's hardly any cost to running a freelance business, right? And it's like you can live that low six figure income, yearly income. It's like, it's a good life to run, right? And, or you can look at it more like, okay, I want to build an agency, in which case, like, you're adding a ton of overhead. Maybe you have a brick and mortar business, you have employees, like there's a lot of stuff that goes into that where you need to be looking at growth, right? And regardless of what your situation is, you do definitely need to be keeping that momentum, even when the times are good, because you never know what's going to happen next month, right? Is it
going to
be a global pandemic? Is it going to be an SEO update? Who knows what's going to happen, right?
We are ready for anything now.
Yeah, after the global pandemic, for sure. Awesome. Now, in terms of your direction, where do you see yourself heading in, let's say, 5 years from now?
Oh, that's a really good question. So I try to set goals. That's something I learned from my girlfriend, actually, because I was going crazy after everything when I started. And I set goals for myself now every year. So this year, I wanted to learn a few things, especially with development, and make sure that my business gets settled. But in 5 years time, possibly take more of the role of a consultant, more of a hands-off approach, because freelancing and doing it in PPC and SEO can be really intense and mentally draining. So I would love to take this knowledge somewhere else, you know, somewhere where I can also apply, but have a more relaxed, maybe 9-to-7 workday. But in the meantime, I'm also thinking to launch my e-commerce. I've launched a couple of them, you know, one of them was great, the one didn't succeed really well. And possibly I will stand back for a bit in a few months. So maybe a couple of years, launch an e-commerce and possibly see it grow or try to make it grow. But in 5 years, I would say possibly trying to prepare myself for a consultant type of life.
I love that. That's awesome. That's a cool goal. And I love how you're also looking at, like, how can you leverage all these skills that you've acquired to build something else that maybe doesn't require that time commitment, right? Like if you're just selling something through an e-commerce store, like you can scale that up once you really dial it in, right?
Exactly. That's the idea. I mean, to be honest, I haven't really thought about it. I'll give you an answer because it's something that we also be thinking about. So we have goals in life, obviously. Yeah. But for now, what I said in the beginning when I started and someone told me, you know, what are your goals? I said, I want to be the best SEO and PPC freelancer out there. Mm-hmm. Like, that's my goal. Yeah. And when I set my eyes on something, I might not achieve it, but I will try my best.
Yeah, I love that, man. Yeah, and it shows. Like, you obviously know what you're talking about. I love that. So if anybody wants to find you, obviously they can find you on Upwork. Probably going direct would be a better way, and that's through your website, right? And it's Digit.
Yes.
I probably will butcher this, but digitadu.com.
Yeah, Digitadu with G. Sorry for the name. I tried to make a mix there, but it seems like English people struggle to pronounce the word. It's Digitadu. Yeah.
Okay. Well, we'll link that up in the show notes. And if anybody's listening and can't see the show notes, it's digitadu.com. But yeah, go there, check it out, get hooked up with Eduardo. He knows his stuff. Could be a great opportunity to hire somebody to work in a freelance capacity in a white label relationship to help your agency deliver more SEO, Facebook ads, or Google ads. This has been a great chat, man. I've absolutely loved listening to you. Now, before we close out, there's three questions, quick fire questions that I'll ask you. And if any of them don't apply, you can just say pass, okay?
Okay. Go for it. I'm ready.
So first question is, don't worry, they're easy. The first question is, what's your favorite business or marketing related book?
Okay. So I read two books recently. One of them is The Lean Startup by Eric Ries. I don't know the pronunciation. And also the What They Don't Teach You at Harvard Business School. So these are really two books because it gives you a good, first of all, the What They Don't Teach at Harvard gives you a really good understanding of how business is really done. Mm-hmm. It's not how they teach you at Harvard or any other university, you know. It gives you those street smart executive tips to run successfully your business, while the Lean Startups is made, it gives you this approach to launching a new business mm-hmm. or idea where you find, execute, and validate ideas really quickly. You know, we've all heard about this agile movement, right? So it's pretty much that, but indeed a startup context.
Mm-hmm. So yeah, definitely. And like, I come from the startup world now, and it's everything. Like, you need to be rolling out these, whatever you want to call it, but like, I call it that minimum viable product. Like, there's so many people going out there building these like crazy intense things and finding out nobody wants them. So yeah, I love that. Those are great book recommendations. Next question, are you following any CEOs or entrepreneurs right now?
I follow Neil Patel quite a bit and Rand Fiske, I think it's pronounced. They're really focused on business strategy. Rand is more focused on SEO. So yeah, I would say those two are the most followed by me, yeah.
That's cool. And the two of them are very well respected in both the marketing world as well as the startup worlds, because they've all bought and sold and startup companies as well, right? Like, I think Rand, I think he's already sold Moz, but I think he's already sold his next startup as well. Like, I think he just recently sold it. And it's like, it's super impressive to see how these big players
operate. Yeah. I think he was running this SparkToro business, right? Yeah. It's a really powerful tool they are trying to build. So that's the last thing I knew from him. Possibly he's sold a few tools because the guy is really smart.
Yeah, or maybe he took on funding, maybe he didn't sell it, but yeah, that's the one that I recall him, some sort of news recently hearing about it, but yes. I'm not totally sure what that was. Now, number three, what's your favorite business podcast?
So definitely this. and I would say, I'm not kidding. And then I would say I listened to this SEO podcast by Timothy Carter and this another one by Neil Patel and Eric Xu, which is marketing school, I think. And they give you really good tips and you know, guidelines to follow in the SEO world and PPC. But I primarily read more articles and journals like the Moz blog, Search Engine Journal, Search Engine Roundtable, SEMrush, Ahrefs. So that's where I spend most of my time reading about SEO and PPC.
Gotcha. Awesome, man. Well, I appreciate this conversation. I've had a really good time getting to know you, and I'm looking forward to putting this out.
It was a great pleasure, Andrew. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Eduardo.